Iconic wrestling coach Dan Gable once said, "Pain is nothing compared to what it feels like to quit. Give everything you've got today, for tomorrow may never come." Gable could be describing those whose achievements have earned them the honor of being inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. Etched in stone are the stories of wrestling's legends and takes you inside the 179 National Wrestling Hall of Fame distinguished members as they share their never-before-told stories about their trials, tribulations, and triumphs. I'm Hall of Fame wrestling writer, broadcaster, and announcer Jason Bryant, and this is the final installment of the Mark Chiarella story, the post-wrestling career. With the amount of success Chiarella had as a wrestler, certainly international success would follow, perhaps even a coaching job. While things don't always happen the way we want them to, for Mark Chiarella, things always seem to fall in place.
You know, I stayed on that training regime and kept going, and it did not work. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, I had a really good, I believe, opportunity to make the team. It just didn't come together.
Yeah, my dad was big into not starting too early. He didn't start until seventh grade.
My life has really been built around three basic principles. You know, my faith, my family, my friends, and then everything else.
And he took this small little agency into a major corporation. And by buying agencies, by expanding, by loyalty in people, he has very loyal people that work for him.
All of it. I love Mark Chiarella like he's a brother. He'll always be a brother to me.
So there's a feeling that you have before a wrestling match. Anybody who doesn't have it's lying to you. Well, think about that feeling, and then just multiply it by 10. That's what stays with you when you get to watch your son wrestle. It never goes away.
In hindsight, Mark Chiarella had come close to doing what no one had ever done at the time. That was to win four NCAA titles. In 1976, while still competing at the University of Michigan, he entered the Olympic trials.
Then that first year after my freshman year, you know, was the 76 games. And I went to Iowa, and I trained with all those guys, and trained with Butch Keyser and Larry Morgan, who was the number two guy. And the crazy thing is, I could beat Larry Morgan. I beat Larry Morgan twice, and he beat Butch Keyser one time. And that's like, you know, it's matchups. You know,
was he the 63-pounder then?
No, I was at 49.5 then.
Okay, 49, yeah.
Yeah, I was still cutting a lot of weight then.
Who was 63 then?
63 was Stan Dezik.
Yeah.
And Wade Chalice.
Yeah.
But Stan will tell you, he beat Wade all the time.
Yep.
You know, that's why he made those teams.
Yep.
Butch Keyser was a 1973 world champion. Mark was feeling good about his future and his run at the Olympics. In 1977, he took a second shot at international wrestling.
Yeah, so in 1977, I wrestled in the Junior World Championships in Las Vegas. And that was my entree to meeting Dennis Finfrock. So I was here in 1977, and the guy that was coaching the team, and now I believe has passed away, Bill Wick, was insane. I mean, we're talking crazy coach. And he had us running 6 miles a day and wrestling twice a day. He's the guy that he had a cigar in his mouth and drank whiskey, and that was Bill Wick. And he had us like train, you know. There was like no excuse for your body breaking down, yet your body was breaking down. And I had a great tournament. I won the Junior Worlds that year. And so that was, and I beat the Russian really, really well. And he was a good guy, and beat the Japanese guy. I think I beat a German. And I had a really, really good tournament. And that was a very big confidence booster. And so, you know, I won that tournament. I won, used to have the United States Wrestling Federation Grand Championship Series, and I won this ring, and it was like a big deal, and I thought, well, that's good, and then I'm getting married, and so it kind of all came together, and I'm thinking, I'm on a good plan. So by 1980, I should be the guy, and I can make this work. And, you know, I stayed on that training regime and kept going, and it did not work. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, I went to Tbilisi, I didn't place. I lost to Chuck Yagla in Tbilisi. I mean, you know, you don't go all the way to Tbilisi to wrestle Chuck, but I did, and I lost to him. And, you know, I had, you know, I had a really good, I believe, opportunity to make the team. It just didn't come together.
It didn't help at the time there was no system to support our elite wrestlers as they continued to compete towards the Olympics. Being an amateur athlete was restrictive in so many ways. Here's Rich Bender, the current executive director of USA Wrestling, the sport's national governing body.
Well, it's, I mean, right, there's, I mean, there wasn't any real professional opportunities for athletes back in those days, right? I mean, at the end of the day, if you made a U.S. World or Olympic team, you got a pair of shoes. And, you know, you were on your own for, you know, how you survived between, well, how you survived. And, you know, there's, I mean, there was a totally different definition of amateurism. And, you know, there was, I mean, athletes, you know, didn't have an expectation that, you know, they could earn a living by just wrestling. I remember I heard Doug Blueball say this one time in an interview. He said, I have two passions in life, wrestling and farming, and you can't make a damn penny in either one of them. And you know, there's some real truth to that.
Since Rich Bender took over USA Wrestling as the executive director in 2000, the NCAA has lifted its restrictions on letting Olympic athletes train with collegiate athletes. That's resulted in close to $4 million a year being infused into over 40 college wrestling programs and their regional training centers. The money supports 1,500 to 2,000 athletes to continue training and competing at the international level. In 2009, USA Wrestling created a program called the Living the Dream Medal Fund. It rewarded athletes that achieve at the highest level, $250,000 for an Olympic gold, $50,000 for silver, and $25,000 for bronze, with also bonuses being paid out during world championships in non-Olympic years. With 2020 type of support, would Mark Chiarella's career have been over this early? He admits he didn't have the technical skills in freestyle that allowed him to dominate in folk style, the American style of wrestling that colleges and high schools participate in across the country. What would a three-time NCAA champion command at the regional training center level? $50,000, $75,000 a year? And how would the medal incentives play into his thinking? How much of a stretch would it be to think that Mark Chiarella could have made some modifications in his style and win an Olympic gold? And that's the thing about wrestling. The fickle beast that it is, we will never know. So Mark Chiarella's wrestling career was over. Losing motivated him more than winning. His wrestling was a painful experience for those who he was matched up against, and his drive and focus set him apart from the pack. Did he learn anything from college that would help him beyond? And how could he possibly match the exhilaration of what he accomplished at the University of Michigan? Chiarella had spent the last 8 years of his life perfecting a craft, and he had done it as well as anyone else. Could he apply what he had learned to teach and motivate college wrestlers to win at a level he did? His resume gave him a lot of options. Oklahoma State, Arizona State, his alma mater of Michigan, and UNLV. Wait, what? UNLV? Not only did he win a junior world title in Las Vegas in 1977, but an impromptu introduction to UNLV's new head wrestling coach, Dennis Finfrock, would open the door for his first collegiate coaching opportunity. 2 years earlier, Finfrock had convinced the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or UNLV as it's known, to start a college wrestling program. Now he was using another sales pitch on one of college wrestling's most decorated athletes to move to Las Vegas and become the program's head coach. But not all salesmen deliver on their promises.
I told Leslie, we're moving to Las Vegas. And, you know, why Las Vegas? You could have gone to, you know, Stillwater, Oklahoma. Well, I wasn't feeling Stillwater. And well, why not Arizona? You know, Tempe's really, really nice. And I said, you know, I just think that this guy's got something going here in Las Vegas. And, yeah, you know, Dennis is a great salesman. I mean, he know how to close a deal. And he closed me. You know, unlike, you know, that coach tried to do at Tennessee, Joe Boone, you know, Dennis was able to do that. And so I came out. And it wasn't the panacea that it was supposed to be. Well, the vision was, you know, first you come out here and you're staying at Caesar's Palace and you're getting wined and dined and it's like this great deal. And the reality was, is that there was supposed to be a condo at the Las Vegas Country Club, that they were going to have me stay at with Leslie. She was pregnant with Mark Jr. at the time. So I'm bringing my pregnant wife out to Las Vegas. And we get out here, and there's no condo. There's no place to live. There's no salary. Let's start with that. That wasn't there either. It was supposed to be, but it wasn't there. And then the other part was is that you got no house to live in. Well, I'm not getting paid. At least not yet. It's not an official position with the athletic department. I don't get insurance, but she's having a baby. And we're going to stay at the hotel for a while. So I'm at the, I don't remember if it was the marina or the dunes, you know, but it wasn't the Caesars.
Like most other things in Mark's life, the situation worked itself out. Well, kind of, sort of. Kind of calling it a roll of the dice, if you will.
70s, early 80s. It was this was a different town at that point. So, you know, coming in and finally having this place and having the baby and then, you know, spending all my savings and then not making the Olympic team and then saying, where am I going to go from here? I guess I'll just stay in Las Vegas.
Putting together a brand new team at any school can be a challenge, but a wrestling team in Sin City, that had additional challenges. The least of which was the fact that it was Las freaking Vegas.
You know, we got every broken toy that was out there or somebody that was rejected by somebody or someone who had a problem somewhere, and they ended up here. So, I mean, everybody knew what Tark did with basketball, but we were kind of the wrestling equivalent. You know, we had guys that, you know, started someplace and then ended up not being there.
Mark Chiarella knew what it took to win at the highest college level. He knew a good wrestler when he saw one and how to work with kids as individuals. That was one of his gifts as a coach.
We ended up building a good team. And, you know, frankly, I was not a good coach to start with. I just wasn't. And I was learning as I went on. But, you know, in hindsight, yeah, think about this for a sec. I'm a head coach at a Division I university, be it UNLV at the time, which was not a dominant wrestling program. What the heck do I know, really, about anything? Yeah, man, what did any of us know? You know, so at that point in our life, didn't know a whole heck of a lot. But here's what we did know. We're willing to work, and we're willing to do what it takes to try to win. And I think, you know, the highlight of that was like when we beat Arizona State in a dual meet. That was a big deal because all of a sudden, like, they were a real program. They actually had real money. You know, they weren't out raising all their money, walking out in the community and talking about UNLV basketball for 45 minutes to then get a check for wrestling, you know, because nobody was really interested in it.
Mark's wrestling salary wasn't enough to support his family, so he took a second job at the Las Vegas Hilton parking cars and learned a little bit about the gambling business. The gaming industry.
I didn't even know what the gaming business was. I thought these were casinos. I didn't know they called them the gaming business. And he said, you need to go to dealer school with my son Michael has a dealer school down here, downtown, and you need to learn to deal craps. First of all, I thought you only dealt card games. I know you dealt craps. You need to learn craps, he says, because the heart of the casino is the craps table, and once you know that, everything else is easy. So I went to dealer school that first year. So I was training, coaching, and going to dealer school. And so the culmination of that was, is that I'm not making the Olympic team. Leslie's due, you know, in that summer of 1980. And I'm dealing craps at the El Cortez as a break-in dealer, and you get no money. They don't pay you back then. If you're a break-in dealer, you get zero. You don't get paid. You don't get any of the tokes either. So no tips for you. So you deal 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden, now you're like part of the fraternity. Now you're going to get paid nothing. And it's like next to nothing. And you got to remember that at that time, the El Cortez, the craps table, was a 25-cent minimum bid. The only casino worse than that was the Orbit Inn across the street was 10 cents. A 10-cent minimum bid on the pass line. So I'm dealing craps, and I'm saying to myself, you know something, this is not my future. You know, I don't feel the vibe here behind the craps table and, you know, watching what's going on. And it's a different, at that point, a different caliber of player.
It was his stint at the Holiday Casino that might have been the nickel that busted the Chiarella house. Figuratively speaking, of course.
So I can remember having that job and moving hams from the cooler, the old hams forward and the new hams back. And I had pushed on this ham and fat hit me in the eye. And I was like, I'm not doing this job anymore. This job is terrible. And the thing that really bothered me about it is I've never punched a clock in my life. And I punched the clock and I got claustrophobic. And I said, you know something? You don't get to go anywhere. You're like, you're obligated to be here. I was always like, you know, go where I want, do what I want to do. So I was thinking to myself, you know, I need to be somewhere else.
In 1984, the problems that had been facing UNLV's athletic department were coming to a head. These issues in 1982 and 83 included uncovering financial improprieties and monumental problems with the budget. To clean things up, UNLV had hired an athletic director whose sole job was to balance the budget. Unfortunately, that meant slashing the budget and many programs. Wrestling survived the first cut, but they were not out of the woods yet. Once cuts were in place, UNLV quickly made another change and hired Brad Rothermel. The financial apocalypse was avoided, but there were other issues and tough choices. Rothermel made Mark an offer he could refuse.
Well, he said, you know, we can do one of two things. He said, we can end the program or you can raise 100% of the budget every year, including the scholarships. And I'm like, I'm not that guy because you can't coach then. Then you're 100% a fundraiser. I said, maybe you can find someone else to do it. He says, no, I'm not going to find anybody else to do it. He says, I'm making you the offer. I said, I can't do that. I mean, it's not what I'm after. How am I going to become a really great wrestling coach? I become a great fundraiser, and I should just become a fundraiser. So at that point, I had promised my dad that if I didn't get a coaching job, I would come back.
We'll get a breather between periods. But when we come back, Chiarella finds his calling, and it's no longer wrestling, but wrestling with a business and with strong emotions as he sat on the sidelines for his three sons' wrestling careers.
Mark is an extremely good listener and an extremely good learner, especially on common sense things. And he quickly learned what customers were looking for, what he had to become knowledgeable about to become successful.
This is Lloyd Keyser, also known as Butch, a distinguished member inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame in 1996. And you're listening to Etched in Stone, stories of wrestling's legends as written and produced by wrestlers about wrestlers who tell these stories with enthusiastic energy and have a unique perspective enabling them to extract stories from legends that wrestling fans want to hear. The stories take you inside the life of some of the greatest athletes ever, with competitors, coaches, teammates, and those who knew these athletes best weighing in on their accomplishments with their own unique perspectives. A new episode of Etched in Stone launches every Tuesday. Don't miss a single episode as the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling bring these stories to life. USA Wrestling provides quality opportunities for its members to achieve their full human and athletic potential and strives to be the world's best sports organization. To learn how you can become a member and download a complimentary biographical magazine of all distinguished members' stories, go to teamusa.org.
So with UNLV essentially crapped out, figuratively and literally, Chiarella would play his hand one more time.
I interviewed at Brigham Young. And I knew there was an opening in Indiana and at Notre Dame. And within about 10 days, I got rejected by the Mormons, the Catholics, and the Big Ten. So I was like out. And I said, you know, that was the deal. So I told Leslie, we're going home. And she always wanted to go back home. And, you know, because we come from both very close families, and we were the only ones that were isolated, that were out of state. So we went back home. And again, my plan was, when am I getting the next coaching job? So I went on staff at Michigan as an assistant coach.
It wasn't a head coaching job, but Mark was back at his dream school, the school where he dreamed about playing point guard and where he became arguably the best Wolverine wrestler in history. He'd promised his dad if it didn't work out in Las Vegas, he would come back to his home state and ultimately get into the family business. Family was and is everything to Mark, and the Detroit suburbs would draw him back.
Farmington, actually, Farmington evolved. It was Farmington Hills. Now it was Farmington Township. Farmington, the city, had been there for the late 1800s, early 1800s, from what I know. Farmington is now quite a large suburban area of Metro Detroit. The area I live currently is very close to where I was brought up. It's just that it was rural when I was brought up, and now the city has consumed it.
His parents' influence remained a huge part of Mark's life, and now he has the opportunity to share and show his own kids the principle, according to Chiarella. See, his kids were free to choose their own careers. Josh is an assistant wrestling coach in Michigan. Mark Jr. and Ryan went into the family business. Each learned from their own wrestling careers, and while it may be surprising to some, Mark didn't push his sons to wrestle. In fact, he prevented them from hitting the mat until the right time. Here's Mark Jr.
We participated in all different types of sports, whether it was baseball, soccer, basketball, football in junior high, as well as wrestling. So my dad was a big advocate on playing all sports, not just one, growing up, and kind of seeing what we kind of gravitated towards and what we liked. You know, growing up, we always grew up together. We did a lot of things together as a family, vacations, going to Northern Michigan, where we have a cottage up there. That was a three-time-a-year trip. But yeah, my dad was big into not starting too early. He didn't start until seventh grade. And he figured if my kids are athletes, I think I can teach them, you know, if they got the drive and they got the athletic ability. I think, you know, starting in seventh grade is not going to be too late. I'm glad I started later. And it's one of those where, yeah, I don't look at it any differently than I would today. I think today, now, you do have more specialization in terms of sports, and they're starting earlier and they're wrestling a lot more, or they're playing more sports, whether it's, you know, wrestling, baseball, or basketball.
In high school, Ryan Chiarella and his dad worked on a plan to win the state championship.
My dad had kind of given me the roadmap of these are the things that you've got to do if you really want to, you know, get on top of the podium. And so I did a lot of that stuff in the offseason, and I got bigger. And I ended up losing in the state finals that next year. So I made it all the way to the state finals, but lost in double overtime. And it was a great match. If, you know, I've rewatched the match, later that year, and it really was a good match. But I still remember my dad. We were in the back of Joe Louis Arena, which is where the Detroit Red Wings used to play. And he told me, he said something like, next year we'll be back here, but we'll be celebrating. And that's what happened. That next year I won it.
Again, after those early stints in coaching, Mark Chiarella didn't further pursue that college coaching career, but he would be intimately involved with the development of his three sons.
So, you know, if the one thing about coaching, whether it was high school or college, because I did all that, from middle school to high school to college, I had the best experience. You know, a lot of people say, oh, this is horrible coaching your own son. I had the best experience coaching my sons. It is the hardest and worst thing to do, though. I mean, it is so hard. So there's a feeling that you have before a wrestling match. Anybody who doesn't have it's lying to you. You know, the feeling that, and a little queasy, I don't know. You know, you start self-guessing yourself. You can flip whatever switch you want, but it's there. But when you start, it goes away, and you're just fighting. Well, think about that feeling, and then just multiply it by 10. That's what stays with you when you get to watch your son wrestle. It never goes away. You feel horrible, and you know something? You're realistic. The realism is this. It's just a wrestling match, right? It is. And when it's over. But during that time, and immediately when it's over, it's the single most important thing in the universe at that point. Then it goes away, and you go on with your life.
We'll take a quick breather, but when we come back, Mark uses the values passed down from his parents to raise his kids and keeps one foot in Vegas with an event he created in 1981.
Well, we went from zero to 30-some teams right away, and they're all the top-notch teams. So we had it, and then we had that new network, ESPN, that was going to televise it.
This is Mark Chiarella, a distinguished member inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame in 1999. And you're listening to Etched in Stone, Stories of Wrestling Legends. The series will take you back to these legends' beginnings as they and those who were there for their journey share their trials and tribulations. The new episode of Etched in Stone launches every Tuesday. Don't miss a single episode as the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling bring these stories to life. Take a deeper dive into these athletes' lives and download a complimentary storybook of all the distinguished members' stories. Go to nwhof.org. or make a visit to the National Wrestling Hall of Fame in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
As a wrestler, Chiarella had a vision of where he wanted to go, and he created a roadmap that did not deviate from its course. While the situations of Mark Chiarella's life changed, the overarching desire to provide for his family did not.
My life has really been built around three basic principles. You know, my faith, my family, my friends, and then everything else, whether that's business or whether it was wrestling and how it is now. Those are the important things. You know, I became a Christian at a really young age, and my faith has really directed me during that period of time all my life.
Within 3 months of Mark's return to Michigan, his father had a heart attack. Mark wasn't just working in the family business. He was now running it.
You know, now I got to do something. And I got to keep his business going because I was concerned about him and my mom and what we were going to do. And so the evolution of that was, is that, you know, I'm going to do it. I stayed on at Michigan for another year. I got things figured out. My dad got healthy again. He came back in the business and decided I'd do a better job of running it than he did. And he wanted to just sell. So I ended up taking over the company.
So how long would it take Mark to get the business going? Well, a letter from Steve Gordon, out of the blue, an old wrestling competitor, would open doors Mark Chiarella didn't know existed and would lead to a close and lasting friendship.
I wrote Mark a letter and I said, Mark, my name is Steve Gordon. You probably don't know me, but I have followed your illustrious, I know what the letter said to the T. I followed your illustrious wrestling career from wrestler in Farmington through U of M back to now to your coaching career. I referred to the match where I learned the intensity, the professionalism, the whole nine yards of the whole package of Mark Chiarella. I said, that was then and this is now. I am the Mark Chiarella of the real estate industry. And I told him, I highlighted that your accomplishments in wrestling don't even hold a candle to the accomplishments I made in real estate. I'd like to meet with you. And he called me up the next day and says, we got to get together. And he said, I loved your letter. We need to get together.
Steve and Mark's first meeting didn't go so well. No, the one back in time, not the one that this letter instigated.
I was the captain of our wrestling team. We were in a near city of where he grew up. And I was a good wrestler, but I wasn't a great wrestler. And that's what I learned, the difference between a good wrestler and a great wrestler. My coach told me a week in advance I probably should go a different weight class. He had a reputation of just being an absolute stud. You know, I was confident. I worked hard that week. At the weigh-in, he had, if you know him, you know he's got crazy eyes. And at the weigh-in, he looked over at me, and I knew I was in trouble at the weigh-in because he wasn't playing games. This wasn't a game to him. He was working for this match. And first mistake I made is I tried to shoot on him rather than play defense. And he caught me, put me right on my back, probably within 30 seconds. I was lucky to get out of that. And he took me for a 5-point takedown right in the beginning. It ended that he pinned me in the first period.
Probably for his own mental health, Steve wasn't thinking about that match when they met years later.
Mark is a big part of my life. We talk a lot. We just share business secrets together. And, you know, something that I'm honored to know is that Mark's my friend. I think it was called Vision. He took a small, his father, Bob Chiarella, had a small little agency, which Mark came back to run. Mark knew nothing about real estate, but he quickly became an expert. Mark's, you know, there's a rule we use. You have two ears and one mouth. Use them in direct proportion. Mark is an extremely good listener and an extremely good learner, especially on common sense things. And he quickly learned what customers were looking for, what he had to become knowledgeable about to become successful. And he took this small little agency into a major corporation by loyalty and people. He has very loyal people that work for him. There's nothing that to be said that he does. He has people that have been with him for 25 and 30 years and would walk through a wall for him. He creates loyalty.
Anyone that's been successful in business will tell you that you have to have goals and a plan to achieve those goals. But for it to be fulfilling, you have to commit to core values.
There has always been the opportunity to grow it even larger. But I think there's decisions that he's made that, you know, he doesn't want to take on private equity money. He doesn't want to, you know, have to debt fund, you know, 10 different deals. That, yeah, you could grow your company substantially, but you also could potentially lose control of the company, when you go down those paths. So I think he's had a pretty strategic focus in how he's wanted to run the companies and how to grow them. And I think with my brother, Mark, and I now here, I think we just bring kind of a younger perspective to the table and just, you know, give different ideas and philosophies that I think will help us even get to the next level. But I think for my dad, it was more about creating a lifestyle, and he felt like he had made enough money during the course of his career that because of the flexibility and the lifestyle he had, where he could do on any given day, he could pretty much set his schedule and determine what he wanted to do.
You constantly hear how sports build, amongst other things, character, perseverance, and discipline. Tools that will help you maneuver life's peaks and valleys. Rarely do you hear a story that demonstrates the achievement of so many of those characteristics.
It's a different thing. And college athletics today takes a lot. And the work ethic that Josh has, that Ryan has, and Mark Jr. has, I'm very proud of the fact that those guys work, and they work hard. All graduated from the University of Michigan.
Degrees.
Ryan and Mark, I believe, have degrees in kinesiology, and Josh is like his dad. He's got a general studies degree from the School of Literature, Science, and Arts.
But Chiarella found a way to stay connected to Las Vegas. He owns and operates one of the most successful college wrestling tournaments in the country, a tournament he was part of creating while at UNLV, and continues to manage today despite multiple challenges. But now, like the business, it's also a family affair. When Dennis Finfrock started the wrestling program at UNLV, the first thing he did was to create an invitational, the Western Open. Using the University of Wisconsin's Northern Open as a template, Finfrock wanted to create a 12-team college wrestling invitational. In 1982, it had a brief home at Caesars Palace, where its name was changed to the Caesars Palace Las Vegas Invitational. It was in the same sports pavilion where legendary boxers Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Tommy Hearns cut their teeth on the way to the famous outdoor championship fights.
Remember, they just built a fantasy tower there, the very first tower? Well, we have the fantasy tower empty. It is just opening. And we will give you whatever number of rooms for the top 10 teams that come. Well, I'm on the phone, and, you know, it didn't take much. Hey, listen, your rooms are all paid for. All you got to do is fly out here and you wrestle in the tournament, stay in Las Vegas for free. Well, we went from zero to 30-some teams right away, and they're all the top-notch teams. So we had it, and then we had that new network, ESPN, that was going to televise it. I didn't know that Bob Halloran actually forced ESPN to televise the tournament, and he packaged it with three fights. So that's why they did it. So they broadcasted the tournament, and I'm thinking, man, we got this deal with Caesar's Palace. We got this thing with ESPN. We're on TV. Nobody's got wrestling on TV. And sure enough, no one else got wrestling on TV after that. I mean, it was like a one-trick deal. Caesar's is like, your people don't have any drop in a casino. There's no money coming from them. I'm like, well, they're wrestling folks. You know, most of them are working class people. They don't have that. Well, we expected, like, you know, like a fight had and that. And then we went on the journey of hosting it at so many different locations and going back and forth to different places. You know, everybody always believes that the very first event at the Thomas and Mack was Frank Sinatra, but it was the wrestling tournament.
UNLV dropped wrestling, but Mark didn't drop the Invitational, keeping the name Las Vegas Invitational. He put his own money into it despite challenges with venues and costs that crept up almost every year. In the past 39 years, it's found homes at the Hacienda, Showboat, 40 miles outside of town at Prim, and even an ice skating rink. This past year, the Cliff Keen Las Vegas Wrestling Invitational turned 39. It's the longest running and now the only true college invitational in the country. Here's Leroy Smith of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Started a tournament that still goes on today
after they dropped the program in the 80s. That tournament is still a major tournament.
The tournament is just another piece of the family business that Mark Jr. finds himself involved in.
And at first, you know, my dad, I don't know how he did it, but he was juggling a lot of things by doing this tournament for so long as he did on his own, that I was able to kind of take off his hands. And a lot of that was like, you know, getting teams, confirming teams, you know, anywhere from 35 plus teams a year up to like high 40s is what we usually get at the tournament. So it was just kind of doing our due diligence on reaching out to myself, reaching out to those teams, confirming all those teams, coordinating hotel, the convention center, you know, all the other vendors that you deal with, you know, electrical guys, mat setup. And at the time, we didn't own that. And then in the last 8 years or so, 8 or 9 years, Ryan got involved, which has been great too. So we've been able to divvy up responsibility in terms of that, which has been great. And it's been able to take a lot of load off my dad. And the tournament seems to be running pretty good.
As a wrestler, Mark Chiarella was very strategic. He always had 5 or 6 moves in his arsenal that he could call up at any time. That carried through to other parts of his life.
You can't be afraid of failure, and you have to be able to execute. I think business is a lot like wrestling, by the way. I think you need to be able to think through your move, visualize it, and then you need to execute it, and that's what he did. His work ethic is unrivaled. I don't care if he's on a sales call, which I've been on sales calls with him, when we were calling the same customer, or whether it's going out and riding the bike for 40 miles. He's relentless. He pushes himself. He pushes himself to the point where, you know, it's just, sometimes it's just crazy.
For Steve Gordon, who's worked in business with Mark Chiarella for a long time, he summarizes the keys to success in managing and leading 170 employees the way Chiarella does.
He's extremely ethical. He's extremely professional. He's extremely, his work ethic is unrivaled by anybody. I mean, he's just a worker, whether it's in business or whether it's working out. Very competitive. He's very quiet. He's very soft-spoken. He does not like to talk about himself. He does not want to be in the limelight. He does not want to talk about himself. And he's sort of an introverted kind of guy, unless you get on the wrestling mats with him. In a social setting, he falls back into the as a little bit of a wallflower. You wouldn't know what he's accomplished in all those aspects of life if you just met him. If I took him to a social setting, which he doesn't like, and there are friends that I've introduced him to, they're almost, you know, and they've heard me talk about Mark, you know, they're almost, you know, don't believe that that's the person I was talking about because he's so humble. Mark uses two sayings: winning lies on the far side of failure. That what that means is you can't be afraid to fail if you're going to win. And another line he uses is, I don't remember my wins, I remember my losses. That means that you, when you execute something and it doesn't work, you learn from that and adjust it proper accordingly.
Ryan agrees, and his own business acumen was also inspired by wrestling.
You know, you got to be able to get up early, you know, making sure you're doing everything, making sure you're staying healthy. There's got to be that balance. And I think people that you know, participate in sports like wrestling, you get that foundation. You understand what it takes to be successful. You keep working, you keep refining the skills. And, you know, if there's areas that you're not as strong in, you know, you just start working on it. Now I've been here 10 years working with my dad full time. You know, I'd say I have a much different approach now than I did when I first started.
And Mark Chiarella was fortunate. He was born into an upper middle class family in a loving and caring environment. When the wrestling bug hit him, the stars aligned. They have to align if you're going to accomplish what he did as a wrestler. He had an NCAA wrestling champion as a coach. He married his high school sweetheart, and she supported him throughout his wrestling career. Leslie and the family followed Mark Chiarella everywhere. They had a house to live in while going to college, and there were no distractions from achieving his goal. However, when it came time to putting in the work, that was on Mark. He learned a lot of that from winning and losing.
Wrestling has given me that, you know, that understanding of resilience from loss, Perseverance, you know, when you want to feel like you're down and you can't do it anymore. I just think that, you know, it's the sport that really is good at doing that. You know, I look from the very first time I ever wrestled in the seventh grade, I was not prepared at all. And, you know, when you're not prepared, I always tell people, you know, being ill-prepared for something, you know, they talk about stress. I'm stressed out. You know something? Stress is not a terrible thing. If you're prepared, you can handle stress. You know, you have to speak to 1,000 people. You have to speak to 10 people. If you don't prepare for it, both of them go poorly. You know, put yourself in the position for success. And, you know, wrestling forces you to do that. It did for me.
And Mark Chiarella also used wrestling to teach the lessons of life to his children.
I mean, work ethic was one thing, always showing up on time, being a good workout partner for a lot of these guys, going on trips in some of these tournaments or national duels and being a reliable workout partner for any of the guys, getting them down the weight, so on and so forth. What he was really good was he always told us that you can always love somebody, but do you really like them? And he had always stuck with me. He told me that years ago. He just kind of floated that along. You know, you can love somebody, but do you really like them? Do you like being with them every single day? And I think he was lucky enough to find someone like that in my mom. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to find someone like that in my wife, who I've been with for 11 years now.
Seemingly, Mark Chiarella rubbed off on everybody, including Olympic champion Steve Frazier.
I was so grateful for Mark Chiarella. Is probably, if I can think of everybody, he's probably the most important teammate and or training partner that I had in my career. I owe Mark Chiarella so much for any success that I ever had, because I learned from what he was teaching me.
In Grand Valley State's Mike Abrams.
Well, I can honestly say without hesitation or without a doubt, Mark is probably one of the finest human beings that I know. He's not going to, no matter what it is, no matter how small, no matter how big, if he tells you he's going to do it, it's going to get done. And he's probably the only person that I can say that about in my life that is that type of character.
And, of course, his kids. Here's Josh.
You know, everyone likes, oh, wrestling's life. And, you know, yeah, it is. It's a huge part of your life, right? If you're doing it at a high level. But there's other things in life, too. And if you're going to lose and you kick the dust off, and you got to respond from that. You know, you got to battle through adversity. And that's, I think, what wrestling really teaches you is, how do you battle through adversity? What kind of person are you? What kind of character do you have?
Leroy Smith of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame has seen a lot of great wrestlers. In addition to his own title, his brothers Mark, Pat, and John create one of the greatest family dynamics in wrestling history. In 1999, Mark Chiarella was inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. Here's what Leroy had to say about Chiarella's place in wrestling history.
I think Mark was one of the most exceptional mat wrestlers the folk style wrestling has ever had. On the mat, I think, you know, you have to put him right at the top of all the legends in the sport of wrestling. Mark was well conditioned, got himself ready. He paid the price. He worked hard. He could work hard as anybody. You know, he's just one of the great leaders in the sport of wrestling. And by leaders, you know, on the mat, off the mat, been on our board. He served on the board of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. So he's been a benevolent guy to the sport all these years after wrestling.
I can think of no person that, you know, probably would have achieved success at the very highest level than Mark Chiarella had he been able to continue to pursue the sport. And who's to say if Mark Chiarella would have had the same opportunities back then that exist today for wrestlers, what he would achieve at the next level? I think, you know, it's, you know, Mark Chiarella is, you know, certainly without question one of the greatest American wrestlers of all time.
Some would say Mark Chiarella has lived a bit of a charmed life, but most born into a life of plenty would not choose a road that included 4 to 6 hour grueling workouts, or work out in a room where temperatures are set like the summer in Mississippi because you're regularly pulling 10 to 15 pounds on top of taking a full college course load. Wrestling's intensity has few peers in sports. Mark Chiarella was also mature beyond his years. Things always fell into place for Chiarella, but they weren't always scripted out the way he had planned. The coaching didn't work out. Neither did the dreams of Olympic glory. He created his own head coaching job and grew his own team. He used his intuitive skills and lessons he learned from the wrestling mat to build a company from 5 employees to over 170. It's hard to imagine how many NCAA wrestling team titles he would have to win to match the accomplishments he's had with his business at FDI. He focuses and sticks to those values passed down every single day. So simple. Family, friends, and faith. Each December, the full Chiarella bloodline gathers at Christmas. That's pretty common. But for some reason, the family has to have barbecued steak. Dad and Granddad are all too happy to accommodate the family. Put on the parka, the boots, the earmuffs, and gloves, and cooks 25 steaks to order in the dead of winter in Michigan. But that's the tradition. And like a good steak, it's also a bit rare. Maybe one day there'll be an eventual 4-time NCAA champion in this bloodline. But rest assured, those on this genetic tree seem destined to live the kind of American dream that everyone aspires to have. Etched in Stone is an exclusive production of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame and USA Wrestling. Download your free souvenir book of the Mark Chiarella story or any of the Etched in Stone stories produced at NWHOF.org. The storybook includes the written story and is filled with pictures and videos of their live matches. This will be the first of many storybooks produced about these legends. Start your collection now, and while you're on the website, take a deeper dive into the profiles of the 179 distinguished members inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. A new episode of Etched in Stone launches every Tuesday.